there have been many major oil spills in the past, there really have been no long-term studies of the potential health effects of the exposures that people might experience when they're involved in cleaning up after an oil spill.
So we're not just talking about the oil itself. We're talking about the dispersants, too. I mean, the techniques to clean it up.
Yes, we're interested in the oil, the dispersants. We're also interested in, you know, the other conditions that people were experiencing, such as the tremendous stress, the heat that they were experiencing at the time they were working on cleanup.
What will this information provide, particularly for NIH?
Well, clearly we're hoping that the study will provide information on the short and long-term, the potential short and long-term health effects of the exposures that may be associated with an oil spill. But in the longer term, we think that the information that we gather will be useful to the decision makers who are responsible for allocating healthcare resources or assessing community needs. And hopefully the information will help community leaders better prepare in the event that there's another oil spill.
So you see this as not only informing policy decisions on healthcare and health services in the region, but possibly decisions all the way up to perhaps an administration, on an administration level, where they're looking at how things are handled if an emergency were to happen.
We hope so. You know, we're going to be look at what people were doing, when they were doing it, and what kinds of protections were in place. I want to point out that, you know, we're doing an observational study, and we believe that good systematic scientific data is the basis for good decision making. But I myself am not involved in any way in policy.
Now, this is the largest study of its kind. Have we not really looked at oil spills before in this way?
As I mentioned earlier, that there have been about eight major oil spills that have been studied out of a total of more than 40, or at least 40 that have occurred worldwide. And with the exception of two studies, most have not had much research done into possible health effects, and the research that has been done has been short term. So, and the other spills were not of the magnitude of this spill. This is one of the largest oil spills ever.
And this study is voluminous. There are so many layers to this. Is the federal government having to partner with the local governments or with local healthcare officials? How does that work, and how would those partnerships work?
So we have been working very closely with community leaders, other investigators, the health departments in the Gulf region to learn more about the landscape there and to develop networks of, for example, for health referrals. If we are studying individuals and identify unmet health care needs, we want to be able to send them to the right place so that those needs can be taken care of. In terms of the base study itself, this is originating from the intramural research program of the NIH, and what we are hoping to do is to establish the cohort and then to provide opportunities for other investigators, community leaders, and interested parties to use our data to address specific topics.
Okay, well, let's talk about the logistics of it in and of themselves, the logistics of it and how that is going to work. When you say you're following these 55,000 people, well, let's just start from the beginning. How do you get them?
Yeah. So we have been working diligently to assemble lists of people who were involved in some way with the oil spill. We have established data sharing agreements to get information from various contractors who provided training to workers, to other groups that were responsible for providing security badges to people. And we've partnered with the Coast Guard and federal agencies that sent researchers to the Gulf. And we are crossing these lists to assemble a major, one large list of people who had anything to do with the oil spill cleanup. We have more than 150,000 names on our list, and we clearly are not going to be able to call all 150,000 people. We are aiming to call about 90,000 of those individuals who will be selected somewhat at random, but with a design, with the idea of making sure that we cover all the possible full range of things that people might have been doing in the Gulf, from those who had the greatest opportunity for oil exposures to the ones who had the least opportunity. And we expect, based on our experience and other studies of this sort, that about 65% of them will agree to join the study. So we will be getting 55,000 people. And those 55,000 people will be asked to complete a comprehensive telephone interview. That's the first step, to tell us about what they were doing during the oil spill, their health at the time, and their current health.
So will you then follow up with them on a six-month or annual basis every so often?
Yes. So we do plan to follow up. The larger cohort of 55,000 individuals will receive an annual request just to update their contact information, and we will be staying in touch with them. And through our ability to link with cancer registries or death certificate information, we will be able to track, you know, major changes in their health. But we're selecting about half of those workers that will be and they will be invited to participate in a home visit that includes a brief medical examination, and we will be collecting additional health information from them. And those people will be followed every couple of years with a request for a telephone questionnaire to update changes in their health. And a smaller subset yet will be invited to participate in periodic medical examinations. So we have many different ways to track individuals over time.
I'm also curious what sort of challenges this would then present for your group. I mean, do you need more resources? Do you need more people? This is a long-term study.
This is a long-term study, and of course, we always need more people, and what we're hoping to do is to develop partnerships as we go, so that we will not be the only ones using the large amount of data that we collect. We do have a plan to make data publicly available through a resource that will focus primarily on protecting the privacy of the individuals who participate. This will be something administered through the NIH so that others will be able to use the data. We have garnered the resources that we need to get this study off the ground, and we have a commitment for the funds for at least the first 5 years. I think our ability to fund the study beyond the first 5 years will, of course, depend on our success. Are we getting the response rates that we see? Are we learning, the things that we hope to learn? And we are optimistic that we will be able to keep this going for at least 10 years.
We are talking with Dale Sandler, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences Chief of Epidemiology and also the principal investigator for the Gulf Study. When you talk about funding for studies, going through this whole continuing resolutions and how to fund the government if there's going to be a federal government shutdown, would something like that impact a study like yours, or are you relatively insulated simply because the funding's already committed? How would that work?
So funding is always a challenge. Funding for research outside of the NIH and within the NIH will be impacted, no doubt about it, by the budget concerns that are facing us. For the Gulf study, we were fortunate to have a commitment of funds for the first 2 years of the study, which I have in hand. And because a lot of the work has to happen early on, I think we're in relatively good shape to create the cohort and build this resource for future work and collaborations. A commitment for funds, and we've been watching what we're doing. We're trying to create the study in a modular way, so if there are things that we will need to cut without harming the science, then we'll do that. So we are aware of the forces around us, and I don't expect that we'll be entirely immune, but this is a high-priority study. This is a priority for Dr. Collins, the head of the NIH. It's a high priority for the director of my institute. And so I am hopeful that we will not take as great a cut as others might be in the future.
And just a reminder of the timeline, you're already starting to reach out to the 100,000 or so people who might be able to participate in the study?
Yes, just this week we mailed our first letters to potential participants. We're starting slowly. We're focused on workers in the four Gulf states, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida. So we mailed out 500 letters this week, and we'll be mailing 500 letters a week until we're ready to gear up to do this at a faster pace. We want to make sure that everything's working and that we don't have to modify things before we go full steam ahead. But we are hoping to be at our full pace by the end of April.